This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Focus podcast. I'm your host, G. Sampath. Is it okay for the union government to impose limits on how much a state government can borrow? Or does a state government have an quote-unquote enforceable right to raise its own borrowing limits? This question raised by the Kerala government has been referred to a constitution bench by the Supreme Court. Now, the key question that the Supreme Court wants a five-judge bench to decide is the following: whether fiscal decentralization is an integral aspect of Indian federalism, and if so, are central regulations fixing borrowing limits on states a violation of the principle of federalism? In fact, in its suit filed before the Supreme Court, Kerala has also accused the union government of imposing arbitrary borrowing limits, due to which the Kerala government is on the verge of bankruptcy, unable to pay salaries, unable to pay pensions, and unable to fulfill its various financial commitments. In this episode of In Focus, we explore this issue in some detail, looking at the federalism aspect, of course, but also other questions flagged by the Supreme Court. Have the center's restrictions resulted in a differential treatment to Kerala compared to other states? And are the center's restrictions in conflict with the RBI's designated role as the nation's quote-unquote public debt manager? To explain this issue in detail, we have with us Kaleeswaram Raj, Supreme Court advocate based in Delhi. Raj, welcome to InFocus and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sambat. Thank you.
So, Raj, to start with, I was wondering if you can explain how did the union government get this power to impose restrictions on a state government's borrowings? I mean, one understands that some amendments were made to the Fiscal Responsibility and Budget Management Act, FRBM Act 2003, in 2018. So what were these amendments and were the state governments consulted on this legislative move, which has had obviously a great consequences for all the states?
Yes, Sampath, the fact of the matter is that the fiscal federalism, understand, until we assimilate it as a constitutional imperative, we won't be perhaps able to understand the scheme of the fundamental law governing the realm. I would say that union's power to impose restrictions on the state borrowing, that in itself is a contested issue. It essentially stems out from Articles 292 and 293 of the Constitution. As you suggested in the question, the enactment was there in 2003. In fact, it was designed in 2000 itself by the erstwhile Vajpayee regime and brought into the form of a central enactment in the year 2003, which we call generally as the Fiscal Responsibility and Budget Management, FRBM Act. The act, as it stood originally, didn't meddle with the fiscal autonomy of the state in any substantial way. That is very important to understand. If the problems arose, the problems of intrusion arose only by way of amendments and especially by way of 2018 amendment. Prior to that, there were amendments which again in 2004, 2012, 2015, there were amendments, but those amendments were essentially related to the extension of the deadline for eliminating the revenue deficit. Therefore, for that reason, those amendments did not substantially affect the fiscal autonomy of the states. Whereas in 2018, they came with a drastic amendment. This drastic in the sense that by way of this enactment, parliamentary enactment, What the parliament has actually done is to meddle with the constitutional design of things fundamentally. But I will just explain that. What they have said is, by virtue of Section 4 of this basic enactment of the Act of 2003, which was amended, the center was given the power to ensure that the aggregate debt of the center and the state does not exceed 60% of the GDP by the financial year 2024-2025. So instead of the center's expenditure or the center's power to borrow, it rather took in the state's power to borrow as well. This is against the scheme of the Constitution, which made a clear distinction between the borrowing by the government of India on the one hand and borrowing by the state on the other hand, by virtue of Articles 292 and 293, read with the corresponding entries in the union list and the state list. Therefore, this 2018 amendment is at the root of the problem, which is now being agitated before the Supreme Court.
Right. I mean, very important points here, Raj. Thank you so much for that. On the one hand, of course, you pointed out this is a contested issue whether the state can impose restriction. And the second point you made is that this whole issue started with the amendments, the drastic amendment made in 2018, which, unlike the previous amendments made to the FRBM Act, actually meddles with the constitutional design. So are you suggesting that the constitutional design was far more integral in terms of a federalistic approach to state finances, with the center not having any kind of a role to impose limits? Is that what the articles you refer to, 292, 293, actually say? I mean, what exactly does Article 293 say, which I think Kerala has also said that it gives it an enforceable right to, you know, decide how much it can borrow? Is that, can you explain a little bit about these two articles you refer to?
Yes, I will try to do that, Mr. Sambath. See, the Constitution envisages a kind of separation of power in the matter of borrowing as well. This scheme is very important. And you will find the seven schedule listing. Center's public debt is shown as item number 35 in list one. And the state's public debt is given in item number 43 in list two. It's significant to note that it does not fall under the concurrent list, in which case the center would have had some kind of upper hand by way of a parliamentary legislation, which, if repugnant with the state legislature, will be prevailing over the state legislature. Such a scenario is absent. Therefore, though our constitution in general has a centralist trait, we generally try to make a balancing act. The constitution also does that to a great extent. There are certain situations where the center's power is rather unique. For example, emergency power. The breaking down of the constitution in the states, the center can act. But the states cannot, doesn't have a reciprocal power in those kind of situations. President's rule, you cannot impose state's rule over the center. These are some kind of unilateralism is inbuilt in the constitution. Nevertheless, in the kind of fiscal matters, the constitution envisages the certain kind of autonomy for the states. And once this autonomy is meddled with, that can create a kind of gross imbalance of, you know, the mechanisms or the institutions under the Constitution. This is the problem. Therefore, what I would suggest is, when the center is acting unilaterally, see the amendment in 2018, is take it again for consideration. The center has, by way of amendment to section 4.2 and especially the proviso to that clause, the center has rather allowed itself to breach the fiscal limits prescribed by the very same enactment in certain contingencies like, say, natural calamity, war, national security requirements, etc., etc. See, as far as the state is concerned, the state also is having a legislation. For example, take the Kerala's case. Kerala also enacted a legislation in the year 2003 called Kerala's Fiscal Responsibility Act 2003, which is constitutionally sound and well supported. But when the sender amends the enactment in such a way that nullifies the state enactment, resulting in a situation where the state is precluded from exercising its fiscal autonomy guaranteed by the constitution. Therefore, it results in a situation where the state is asked to request for the mercy of the center for the purpose of borrowing, which is not falling under the constitutional scheme of things.
Right. I mean, that is very well explained indeed. Thank you so much, Raj. I mean, it's fairly clear, I think, that there is a mandated separation of powers when it comes to fiscal matters. But nonetheless, the center did go and make this amendment in 2018. So how was it able to do this? Was it not challenged before the Supreme Court or any other court? This kind of clearly it's in violation of what the constitution and mandate is. How come, has there been any challenge at all before this particular suit in 2024?
In fact, this particular case, that is original suit number 1/2024, is the first of its kind, and therefore it is quite unprecedented and unique. Anyway, since the matter is now referred to the constitution bench, a quietus will have to be given to this legal issue, constitutional issue, which is also a political issue, actually. You know, this is having an impact in the day-to-day functioning of the government, the process of governance as such, and this will have to be rather decided by the constitution bench based on the instant reference.
Right. So one of the key terms which get bandied about when we discuss this particular issue is something called the NBCs, or the net borrowing ceiling. So in this case, there have been suggestions that Kerala has been getting some kind of a differential treatment compared to other states. I mean, we don't see other states complaining as much as Kerala. So what exactly is this NBC? How is it working in actual terms? And is Kerala getting differential treatment from the center? Obviously, it's not a BJP government. We know that there is a lot of evidence that BJP state government versus a non-BJP state government, there is a very different treatment, not least in the way the governors end up operating. But in this case, coming to this particular case, what are your thoughts?
In fact, the kind of differential treatment or kind of, you know, discrimination is writ large in the process. And Kerala is not the only state which has suffered it. Even during the deliberation in the Supreme Court, during the very same litigation, the center has taken a stand that they have received 14 requests by 9 states altogether, and for permission for borrowal. And the sender has declined all the 14 requests. This was the stand taken by the union in the present case. So which will indicate that Kerala is not the only state which has suffered the discrimination. Kerala may have a better, rather, you know, case before the Supreme Court, in the sense that because of the economic specificities of the Kerala, when the borrower is interfered with, since it's a state which doesn't have much to produce and depends much on tourism and IT and other knowledge industries and all, and without any material production as such in the conventional sense, the interdiction against the borrower may be affecting the state more. But the fact of the matter is that the center has converted a parliamentary legislation which was supposed to govern the union's activities for transparent fiscal management and equitable and distribution of country's wealth as a means to harass a particular state chosen by the center based on some other the temporal political considerations. That is the unfortunate part of it.
Right. I mean, that is very well put indeed. I mean, the center has converted a parliamentary legislation, which was a means for its own, right way of financial management, into a tool for harassing state governments. I mean, now these restrictions which the union government is putting on state governments in Kerala in this instance, aren't they in conflict with the designated role of the Reserve Bank of India as the nation's quote-unquote public debt manager? These are exactly the words of the Supreme Court when it referred this case to a constitution bench. So what are your thoughts on this, Raj?
That's a significant question, Sambhat. See, there are fourth branch institutions envisaged by the Constitution in the realm of fiscal relations. Not only the Reserve Bank of India, but even the Comptroller and Auditor General. See, the Comptroller and Auditor General, again, is designed as an independent fourth branch machinery to work as an umpire in such kind of situations. It is not healthy for a quasi-federal system to perpetuate the kind of disputes between the center and the states on a permanent basis, which in itself is a big hindrance to the process of governance. Therefore, the Constitution has designed the fourth branch institutions and several statutory institutions as well. The Comptroller and Auditor General, which is designed by Articles 148 and 149 of the Constitution, can work not only with respect to the accounts of the Union and the states, but even with respect to the authority or body, provided it is that kind of examination is supported by a law made by the Parliament. There is a sea of difference between the center government itself doing these things and an independent body like the Comptroller and Auditor General doing such supervision. So when a fourth branch institution with a kind of independence, a sense of independence is doing it, the space for complaint will be extremely low, as history of India has already demonstrated. Whereas when the center executive directly does this, just see the letters issued by the center executive, which is the subject matter of the Supreme Court litigation. In one of the letter, that is the letter dated 27/3/2023, what the center has done is the ceiling was limited based on the assessed gross state domestic product, GSDP, for the financial year, which came to INR 32,442 crores. So this borrowing was capacity was limited unilaterally by the central government, which is something which may not be generally done by the Comptroller and Auditor General, which will expectedly act in a non-partisan manner. This is the big difference. And therefore, as you suggested in your question, the parliamentary legislation has attenuated the role for the agencies like the Reserve Bank of India and or the Comptroller and Auditor General.
Right. Speaking of the borrowing cap and the figure which the government has come up with, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the executive overreach it's not just limited to one domain, as we have seen in this fourth branch institution. I think it's a very good perspective to have how their domain has also been encroached upon by the executive in this extremely unitary dimension of governance we are seeing. Now, the Supreme Court, while referring this case to the Constitution bench, refused Kerala's plea for an interim order to lift, you know, the net borrowing ceiling so that it could borrow an additional 26,000 crores on an immediate basis to fulfill its various, you know, pension payments and salary payment requirements. And while rejecting Kerala's request for an interim order to lift this ceiling, the Supreme Court justified it by saying that as the case stands today, quote unquote, the balance of convenience lay in favor of the union government. Now, what is the meaning of this balance of convenience? I mean, as a layperson, can you please? I mean, I don't understand what it means.
Yeah, in fact, Sambhat, I have my own reservations about the way in which the triple test has been applied by the Supreme Court for rejecting the interim relief claimed by the state of Kerala. Of course, the reference to the Constitution triple test, yes, triple test we conventionally use in legal parlance when an interim relief is claimed, one will have to show three things. Number one, he or she has the prima facie case. An existence of a strong prima facie case or a strong existence of a prima facie case. Number two, the irreparable injury. That is to say, if the prayer is granted, who will be suffering an irreparable injury? And if the prayer is refused, who will be suffering the irreparable injury? That will be another test, the second test. The third one, as you suggested, is the balance of convenience. That again has some nexus with the second test. And balance of convenience would mean that who will be in a better position to suffer the order which is expected, which is said to be passed by the court. If an order is granted, who has, when you balance the rights, interest, prejudice, etc. of the contesting parties, whether grant of relief will be more justified or whether refusal of the relief will be more justified is what is implied by the term balance of convenience. But my reservation would be that this conventional, the triple test, which is essentially a common law practice, which is normally used in the civil suits and all, in common law parlance, may not be very as such applicable when it is a constitutional issue. To elaborate it, if something is on the face of it unconstitutional or anti-constitutional, then you may not, that will have to be given some kind of primacy and not this kind of balance of convenience, irreparable injury, etc. This is a case where, on the face of it, the sender was acting as against the intent and content of Articles 292 and 293, which envisage the separation of power between the sender and the states. Having made out that case, then going straight away to this conventional principle as if it is a kind of civil dispute or a boundary dispute was not very, very, very much appropriate according to my view on that. The court, on the other hand, should have rather focused on the prima facie constitutionality of the amendment and of the impugned actions. And that, based on that, the court should have, in fact, granted the relief instead of declining it. The granting of relief would only mean that a state-owned corporation in the state with all the, sureties and other securities and other kind of fiscal safeguards will be borrowing certain money, which is, which is in the urgent requirement list of the state, which is an imperative to have immediately, in which case the state would have had its, the usual requirements met. Instead of that, by taking note of the fact that a portion of amount was consented to be paid, that is rupees 13,608 crores was consented to be paid by the sender. And there was only a requirement for some more amount, and that was rather postponed by the referral court on the ground of reference till it is decided by the 5-judge bench. No further borrowing will be allowed according to the interim order. That part of it I am not very happy with.
Right. I mean, it does seem a bit bizarre. I mean, on the one hand, there is a recognition that this is a constitutional issue, which needs to be decided with sort of a grave thinking on this whole framework of separation of powers and who has powers to impose what restriction. And then suddenly it becomes some kind of a civil suit kind of a scenario where you're talking about balance of convenience. It's strange indeed. Now, coming to one more granular aspect of this case, Raj, one bone of contention is that as per the current regulations, borrowings by state-owned enterprises are also deducted from the NBC or the net borrowing ceiling. And Kerala has opposed this kind of a practice, saying that it is unfair. So is it unfair, or as the center would like to argue, is it reasonable given that state governments, we know, do tend to, I mean, all governments do tend to finesse their fiscal deficit numbers by off budget or borrowing, which they don't need to show in their budgetary calculations. So what do you think? Is it like unfair?
It is unfair, and to a great extent it is unreasonable and even illegal, I would say. The reason is that, see, the borrowing ceiling, the imposition of a net borrowing ceiling on an authority, which, you know, is not the government as such. In the Kerala's case, it is an enterprise is called, you know, KIFBI, which may be a public, you know, supported institution, but to impose a net borrowing ceiling on such an authority, such an establishment, in the matter of, you know, the extra budget borrowing, would hamper, would meddle with the day-to-day administration of the state. It will have direct repercussion because, see, a legal entity will have to be recognized as such, and that the transactions by that entity will be normally governed by the rules of the market, not by the dictations given by the center from time to time. It is something which is very artificial and unnatural. So if when an organization like KIFBI in Kerala, for example,
organization is this? Can you
there is a particular organization which is governed, which is envisaged by the state government. So that organization, which is made for the purpose of borrowing money by offering bonds. Normally, we call it as masala bonds in the common parlance. So bonds are sold by the organization which is designed by the state government, and, you know, with due security and adequate mortgage and all of things. This independent state-owned organizations which is doing the borrowing. When that borrowal is interfered with, you know, by the central government, which is totally a stranger as far as the transactions are concerned, you know, that has resulted in some kind of lawlessness in the realm of transactions and the commercial transactions. That is highly unwarranted. That is not contemplated, and the present enactment is bad in law, in as much as it's tries to make such intrusions into normal business transactions with a public law element.
Right, intruding into normal business transactions with a public law element, and that to a public law which is now being referred to a constitutional bench. One last question, Raj, before I let you go, we're running out of time. Now, the central government has claimed that Kerala's financial problems are due to its own fiscal mismanagement dating back to the last 20 years. It's not like something, you know, they are on the verge of bankruptcy overnight. It's been building up, and this has nothing to do with the center's, you know, ceilings on borrowings. If Kerala had managed its finances responsibly, they wouldn't be in this kind of a situation today. Now, this is the center's argument, which it has made in the Supreme Court. Now, without legislative tools like the amended, let us say, FRBM Act and these NBCs, what options does the union government really have when faced with financial profligacy or financial irresponsibility from different states? I'm not saying Kerala has been financially irresponsible, but theoretically speaking, if any state, we know that state governments do tend to be, push the envelope in terms of fiscal responsibility is concerned. So when they do act in this manner, should the union government intervene? And if it were to intervene, what kind of options, or should the union government not intervene at all?
The straight answer to your question, Sampathy, is that we have the controller and auditor general. That's the very purpose of Articles 148 and 149, which is a constitutional body, which is supposed to be an independent body, unless the center, of course, doesn't intrude with its functioning as well, which also, you know, we find some negative signals in recent times, unfortunately, that apart. The controller and auditor general is supposed to look into such things, and a scenario where the sender is making such accusations against the states, and the states in turn making the allegation of fiscal profligacy as against the center. That is something disturbing. In fact, the state government of Kerala has in the instant case pointed out certain reports, not even pointed out, they relied on the Moody's report of 2023, the IMF report of 2023 to indicate failure on the part of the center to regulate public debt. So in such a scenario, these allegations and counter allegations will not take us anywhere. The problem essentially happens because whatever things the controller and auditor general is supposed to do in an objective and impartial way, in the best interest of the state and the center, is now being done unilaterally by the executive at the center. This is precisely the kind of change that has been attempted to be made into the whole thing. That is something unfortunate. That it shows essentially a kind of aggrandizing executive at the center, as it happens in other realms of the polity. Like, if to draw an immediate analogy, this is somewhat similar to the situation where the center is using the gubernatorial offices at the states to hinder, to meddle with the governance in the state. This is a kind of fiscal parallel for that. And the center is doing the same thing with the financial transactions of the states, especially the states which are governed by the opposition parties. That is the unfortunate part of it. And therefore, I think the problem can be resolved only by way of an assertive judiciary, which takes a kind of, constitutional posture in the matter and decide it with a sense of federalism and the other principles attached to the constitutional morality.
Right. I mean, thank you so much for that, Raj. I mean, I think it's fairly clear from what you're saying that the center is basically seems to have taken over a job, a function that was being performed by the Controller and Auditor General of India, the one of the fourth branch institutions, as you characterized it. And this kind of unilateral reach by the executive, into this Controller and Auditor General's domain, and has resulted in this current impasse over borrowings and ceilings on borrowings. And hopefully, as you said, the judiciary will take a reasonable and fair call on this issue when it comes up before the Constitution Bench. Once again, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you, Raj. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.